So welcome to the Harvard Macy Institute podcast. I'm Victoria Brazel, and today I'm joined by three lovely guests to talk about something called adaptive expertise. So we're going to talk about what we mean by this term, and we're going to look at an article that my three guests have been authors on, entitled Educating for Adaptive Expertise, Case Examples Along the Medical Education Continuum. And this is from Advances in Health Sciences Education, and also featured in the Educators Program, which is part of the reason why we're talking about it today. But let me introduce you to our guests. First of all, Martin Pusick, a pediatric emergency physician at Boston Children's, associate professor at Harvard Medical School. And he's had a training professional career in Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, New York, and now Boston. He's been on the podcast before talking about artificial intelligence way back in season two, before we had ChatGPT versions 3, 4, and 26. And also interested in learning analytics, big data, diagnostic expertise. How are you, Martin?
Good, just fine. Thanks for having us on.
Also, Alyssa Hall, who many people will know from Harvard Macy programs. She's the director of learning and technology innovation at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. She's the co-director for the Transforming Your Teaching Using Technology HMI program. She, in her bio, she tells me she's passionate about teaching, learning, and technology, and loves all things outdoors, which is a little bit confronting to see both Rochester, Minnesota, and loving things outdoors when you're an Australian. How are you, Alyssa?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. An honor and pleasure to be here.
Bill Coutrer is a physician and associate professor of pediatrics and anesthesiology at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine in Nashville, Tennessee, training in Kentucky and Texas. Bill's now actively involved in medical student education, overseeing curriculum development, student assessment, and program evaluation in his role as the associate dean of undergraduate medical education. Very interested in understanding how students learn in the workplace. How are you, Bill?
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
All right, well, let's get right into it here. What do we mean by this term adaptive expertise? And I'm going to quote a couple of lines from the paper here and from the definitions provided. The combination of both efficient problem solving for clinical encounters with known solutions, as well as the ability to learn and innovate when faced with a novel challenge. The flexible use of knowledge and the ability to generate new solutions. Well, Martin, this all sounds good in theory, but can you elaborate on that definition for us and give us a sense of what that means in practice?
Well, to me, the key word there is combination. It's having available to you both a routinized approach. And so this isn't to denigrate routinization. A lot of what we do in medicine is actually to try and standardize guidelines and decreasing practice variation when it's useless, when it's not helpful, when it's harmful and the like. But that can only take us so far. You know, kind of algorithms and flow charts and the like, you know, a lot of my time gets spent not on the routinized, really, really straightforward, follow the algorithm, follow the recipe type of thing. But instead, I find it amazing that on any given Thursday night when I go to the emergency department, I see stuff I've never seen before. I see combinations of things that that make me scratch my head and wonder, for this particular patient, I know that the routinized approach would suggest this, but I'm going to step off of that and I'm going to do this other thing because I think it's the right thing to do based on my experience, based on my training, and based on this particular patient. And so, so again, I stress that notion that it's a combination of both knowing your stuff, knowing your basics, knowing your fundamentals, knowing the routines, knowing the recipes, but being able to step off of them in the right measure and innovate in service of the patient. And that, I think, is the key part to defining adaptive expertise and celebrating it and teaching for adaptive expertise as we've come together to talk about.
Yeah, and it seems like both recognizing the moment when that needs to happen, as well as then having the skills and things to draw upon to solve it. So just to take an example, I know we often talk about this in diagnostics, but let's take even a therapeutic approach. Let's say you've got a child with a broken arm and you're going to give them some procedural sedation to set that arm. There's some lovely protocols for that and you're doing that. But then you see that there's something a little bit different about this child, or something a little bit different even about the team that you've got that's administering that. So you would kind of adapt, thinking, well, I have some foundational knowledge about the drugs and the techniques for procedural sedation, which means I'll adapt my process. Would that be an example?
Yeah, that's an excellent example. And what I point out in that example is A, the recipe. I go into the room. I know I'm going to give this drug in these dosages, because for a 5-year-old with an elbow, that's how we would start. But then the situation takes over. And so if it all goes according to routine, then I shouldn't prolong things. I shouldn't be trying to pull some artistry or anything like that. But if it doesn't go to routine, if they're in more pain than the drug was willing to take, then I need to think about my approach. But at the same time, if my team member, the orthopedist who's reducing the fracture, is taking longer, is being inefficient, is really, really slick and we're done sooner and the like, well, then it's on me to tailor the approach to what's happened in the room and what's happened in the team, and to be able to come across and bring that ship home to a successful landing, you know, kind of whatever the combination of variables is on that particular, for that particular person.
Mm. And in the article, you, as the author team, illustrate that this is really important in the dynamic environments in which health professionals work these days, and also illustrate that COVID was a great example where people had rapidly draw upon their adaptive expertise in order to care for patients in new ways. Well, while we're still on this definition thing, Bill, would you sort of add anything to that definition?
Yeah, I really like the definition that Martin provided there. And I think that key moment of adaptive expertise is recognizing that the recipe or the routine approach will work, keep doing it, or something about this situation demands something different. And it's that moment of recognition and then being able to move forward with the adapting and adaptive expertise. One other thing that I really like that Maria Malopoulos and Nikki Woods have written about, they describe adaptive expertise as a product of a learned skill set characterized by habits of mind that develop over time and with practice. And so it's part of the reason, as someone who spends most of my time thinking about medical students, I love that building these habits early and starting to think about how do we develop those habits of mind so that when they are in the clinical space and confronted with that moment of routine versus adaptive, they are starting to develop those habits of mind early.
Mm, yeah, very important. And so for listeners, you might really want to have a look at Table 1 in this paper, because it's a beautiful list of some definitions around some of these educational concepts and how they fit together with this broad umbrella of adaptive expertise. Well, let's turn our attention now to where Bill has given us a nudge, which is how do we learn adaptive expertise? It's one thing to say this is great, and Martin tells us that he knows when he should be applying his adaptive expertise, but how do we get there? So the paper describes 4 instructional strategies: developing deep conceptual understanding, know a bunch of stuff underpinning the practice, exposure to meaningful variation, emphasis on productive struggle and discovery — that never sounds like fun when you're a trainee or a student, but we know it's good for us — and metacognitive strategizing, thinking about how we think. Alyssa, you're a instructional guru. Did you want to sort of think about those as a concept here and the learning of adaptive expertise? But can I ask you, in the context of continuing medical education, there's a temptation, I suspect, for people to think either I've got this or I haven't at this point. But these instructional strategies are important at that point as well?
Yes, those instructional strategies are important, and really think about that promotion of the transfer of learning, and also how monitoring and assessing the learning can happen with those instructional strategies, and thinking about connecting back with Bill's comment and the habits of mind, thinking about also the learning environment that is fostered to help move forward with those particular instructional strategies.
Yeah. Okay. So I think there's 2 things we've got here. One is the picture of what we want our learners to end up looking like with their adaptive expertise. And the second that we're going to take each of you through is your case examples of how you actually design some instructional programs that do that. Just before we do that, there's a pretty important other concept in here that was introduced or drawn upon, shall we say, the Master Adaptive Learner Framework. And Bill, this is largely your work, or draws on some of your work, and there's a beautiful graphic in there about the learning of adaptability and this productive tension that Martin described between the efficiency but also the innovation. And there's also put in the show notes for people that paper as well, the conceptual model. But Bill, maybe you could make some comments and build on what Martin said about this tension between the efficiency and the innovation.
Yeah, there's definitely a tension that holds there. And thinking about this idea of a master adaptive learner, there's been a great team that's been working on this, really to pull together a lot of really solid educational science, to pull it together to create a shared model, a shared language to facilitate conversation between learners, educators, coaches, when those are available, and to help think through that type of learning process. Because we recognize that often efficiency feels at odds with innovation. And this, a lot of this comes from the work of Branchford and Schwartz, that there's this learning adaptability corridor where you're getting the best of both worlds. And it really, that's where adaptive expertise is housed, when it is the right amount of efficiency, the right amount of innovation. It's the knowing when to slow down and innovate or adapt, knowing when that's not what's necessary. So as we talked about earlier, it's really kind of context situation specific. And then within that, the Master Adaptive Learner model tries to pull together different pieces of the educational science, all centered around the idea of self-regulated learning, with planning, learning, assessing, and then adjusting one's practice, that for those that are clinicians, very much mimics the PDSA cycle of quality improvement. And we love that idea of learners doing quality improvement cycles on themselves as practitioners, as learners. And then pulling in a few of the other pieces of the literature around curiosity and growth mindset and internal intrinsic motivation and resilience, that how could we put forward a model that allows conversation to where a learner might be getting stuck, and to highlight that and provide some coaching around a specific area, as opposed to providing generic guidance, which unfortunately my learners say they get often, of read more, just do it better, which isn't all that helpful when they're struggling with the learning process.
Mm, absolutely. And so I think that's super interesting, because often these concepts are seen in abstraction and separately, but you've sort of drawn that into a bit of a cohesive model, drawing on some of those theoretical underpinnings. All right, well, let's now think about how this plays out in each of your examples. The article gives us this deep dive into the conceptual foundations of adaptive expertise, and then we go through the undergraduate medical education, the graduate medical education, and then the CPD or CME type areas. So let's, and you sort of identify that there's some different barriers, enables, and examples in each, but let's start with the undergraduate medical education at Vanderbilt, Bill, and I'm going to quote again from the paper, the idea that we're shifting from standardized content to standardized process. And that's quite interesting, isn't it? And I know we're also talking about having consistent outcomes, but I think you're saying the learning process should be drawing on those four strategies. So what does that look like? If you're a medical student at Vanderbilt, how do you develop your adaptive expertise?
What a fun question. We started the work of redesigning our curriculum around 2010 and implemented a new curriculum we call Curriculum 2.0 in 2013. And with that, made some very intentional choices that allude to these strategies and really build on it. And that idea first of deepening conceptual understanding, we really wanted our students in what became a one-year pre-clerkship phase to really build a solid foundation of those foundational sciences. And so one of the strategies we chose that was a standardized process to help them achieve that deep conceptual understanding was to implement case-based learning. Again, we are not the only school to use case-based learning or problem-based learning, great educational science. We really made that the backbone of our pre-clerkship week, with unknown cases that they worked together in small groups, because it allowed them to focus on deep conceptual understanding, but it also gave them the opportunity to have some meaningful variation between cases and what about this, what about that, but also the productive struggle, which is not fun, as you alluded to earlier, that as learners, it's hard to struggle. And so that's one of the ways we tried to provide a standardized process, i.e. the CBL framework, working in those small groups with a facilitator that really touched on those. One of the other pieces of our new curriculum program that we added really focuses more on the metacognitive strategies. That's the kind of the fourth of those strategies that we mentioned. And it's a portfolio coaching program. So as we redesigned the curriculum, we thought a lot about assessment data and how do we help our students grow and develop over time. which is lovely. We've built dashboards and a portfolio where all of that assessment data is housed. We also understood that could be very overwhelming for a learner to see all of this data. And so we partnered them each with a portfolio coach that meets with them multiple times each year to help them review their data, to identify areas of strength. Great, keep doing those. To identify those areas for growth. And so functionally, they're walking the learner through this master adaptive learner process of being able to identify areas for growth, the planning, strategies for learning, to actually do the learning in that learning phase, to compare their internal kind of self-assessment, which is hopefully informed, with an external piece of feedback and some back and forth through that coaching. And then lastly, to develop a personalized learning plan for moving forward, how might they implement those changes and actually adjust either their learning or their practice? And so we really like the idea of helping them develop those metacognitive skills starting in year one, and it builds throughout the 4 years of our curriculum.
Mm. I mean, it sounds fantastic, and I suspect your learners think that that's a sort of rich and good way to learn. One of the things you identify, though, is this runs up against some of the efficient learning that they need to do for exams. As always, assessment is the bugbear here. We've got this great learning going on, but then we also have to do a test.
You hit the nail on the head. Absolutely, there is a tension there. And so we actually just call that out. We name it and say, this is hard, and it feels more efficient to cram for a test, to memorize factoids, and it doesn't serve you in the long term. And so that, much like compound interest in the banking world, learning in this deeper way sets you up for future success in the learning world, in the ability to deeply understand. And it provides that foundation for adaptive expertise. And so we call it out, we name it, we talk about it early in the curriculum. That said, I don't know that they always believe me the first time we say it.
Excellent. All right, well, let's turn our attention now and stick with these four instructional strategies: the developing deep conceptual understanding, exposure to meaningful variation, emphasis on productive struggle and discovery, and metacognitive strategizing. And Martin, let's talk about emergency medicine training, because that's something you and I both did and are responsible for some people now who are learning. I actually feel like we have it easier than the undergraduate folks, because it seems to me that a lot of what we do when we've got our so-called, I think your words are, cognitive apprenticeship in the emergency department, this meaningful variation is everywhere and the desirable difficulties feel like they're everywhere. Tell us, what does an intentional instructing for adaptive expertise in an emergency medicine program look like?
Well, even the undesirable difficulties are abundant. You know, the emergency department is, in fact, just a great context for inducing adaptive expertise. I mean, meaningful variation, as you said, we deal with everything that comes in through the door, and so that they come in all sorts of variations. And the example you gave earlier of the child with an elbow fracture needs a procedural sedation, as those come in, they're all different, and they all require a customized approach as you come across. In the paper, there are a couple of just great examples, one at NYU and then the other one at Michigan. And the NYU example, I've worked in that emergency department. They were very, very intentional about creating an emphasis on productive struggle and discovery. And what that looked like was deciding that the attending beside the senior resident was resulting in the senior resident deferring to the attending and having a superficial approach to taking ownership of the department. And so that what they did intentionally was to remove physically the attending. They moved them out of the immediate locale where the senior resident was, and had all the junior residents, medical students, and the rest of the team report to the senior resident directly. And so that's harder. You can't turn to Dr. Brazil and say, what do you think? And instead, you have to own it, or you have to walk the 15 feet across to see Dr. Brazil where she's seated. And that creates its own little dynamic that is, I think, brilliant in terms of inducing you to decide whether you're going to own this decision or are you going to pass the decision on to your attending. And so, so again, it's a desirable difficulty. It's harder to do it that way. And I have to own it, or I have to think about whether I should own this and bring it across. And so that, so that little maneuver, is an example of just a little nudge, a little adjustment to the learning environment that you can do in order to induce, an adaptive approach in our trainees. And then the Michigan example is one of developing deep conceptual understanding. And so in the Michigan example, what they did was within their emergency department, for clinical care reasons, they created a pod that is for critical care. And so that the sickest of the sick, kind of a mini ICU within the emergency department. And they had their emergency doctors, who you can now do an emergency medicine fellowship in critical care. And so that they have emergency doctors who are familiar with the Bill Cottrer level physiology of what's happening in a super sick, super ill, unstable emergency department patient. But in creating this pod, they slowed everything down. In that graphic that, that Vic talked about earlier, you know, kind of there's this balancing off of efficiency against innovation. For these sickest of the sick, you have to sacrifice efficiency, one-to-one nursing, one-to-one attendings. We take as much time as it takes to figure out the puzzle. And have to reason off of their deep mechanistic understanding of how this person's shock is playing out, and is it what could be the reasons for this this presentation of hypotension and the like. And so that so in the Michigan example, again, what they did from a pedagogic standpoint was to take the residents and take them out of the hurly-burly of the regular emergency department, where efficiency and getting patients through is really, really important. And you might encounter a deeply ill shock patient, but your emphasis would be on dispoing them as soon as you possibly could. Instead, they get dispoed within the emergency department. And in that critical care pod in the emergency department, now the residents rotate there. And the residents are planted there, and the residents see a different approach based on deep mechanistic understanding of what's happening with one patient and watching it play out as they choose the pressors, as they choose the airway, the ventilation maneuvers, as they choose all of that. They can think really, really deeply about this one case and learn adaptability, learn adaptive expertise based on slowing it down. And celebrating the deep mechanistic understanding, which you might sacrifice were you in the efficiency prioritized part of the emergency department. So sorry, Vic, I went off on a tangent, still love those two examples within the paper. And so that I just want to call them out and celebrate them. And, just as really, really nice, pedagogic twists on this concept.
Yes, well, in illustrating them, I think you've also illustrated the challenges here, which is you come up against the efficiency of work requirement that is often in these environments. While it might be a rich source of meaningful variation, one of the risks is if we don't see what happens with our treatments and our interventions in this meaningful variation because we're on to the next thing, we miss that part of the instructional strategy. We're not really getting meaningful variation because we're not finding out anything from it. And it feels like a little bit of a luxury to be able to do that. And just for listeners, the emergency medicine lingo of dispo means disposal, which sounds a bit bad. What we mean is careful referral of patients onto the next phase of their care. Is that right? Yes, thank you. All right. Well, from the laboratory of the emergency department, let's think about how this then plays out at the CPD level. And Alyssa, you're responsible for a group of people responsible for the Mayo Education and Technology Forum, which I understand now you've been doing for more than 10 years. So how do these four instructional strategies play out in that sort of environment?
Yeah, thank you, Vic. I want to first just explain the Mayo Clinic Education and Technology Forum. It's a multi-site, interprofessional faculty development. We just celebrated our 11th year, focused on bringing together educators, stakeholders, learners to focus on supporting innovation and a community around developing knowledge, skills, and attitudes on pedagogy and technology, and really highlight that one of the things that's special about the Mayo Clinic ETF is the deliberate instructional design. So as I go through the four instructional strategies, highlighting that the structure of the event itself, we chunked out into the four phases of the Master Adaptive Learning Framework, while within each of those four phases, focused on engaging our participants in instructional strategies to promote that adaptive expertise. So just to kind of lay that groundwork, because it's a pretty special event and an opportunity for an organization.
You can give together. A big unashamed plug here. I mean, it sounds fantastic.
And we did this in a virtual environment also. So I want to make that kind of give that context as we're thinking about the significance of bringing together the organization as a whole for this event and how we continue to use this as a bridge throughout the year to reinforce these instructional strategies and learning. So within the Mayo Clinic and Education Technology Forum, the four strategies really played out with thinking about the deep conceptual understanding, starting with some of the pre-work we encouraged people to do, curating resources and articles and podcasts to promote that shared language that Bill referenced, and then also the opportunity to self-assess. Where am I at in preparation for this event, as well as start to think about how they may personalize their learning as part of a member of this community for the Mayo Clinic ETF. Throughout the event, so when we came together for the synchronous session, really looking at teaming with subject matter experts such as Bill and Martin to help facilitate some of our micro lectures. And we really leveraged a persona approach to help integrate that meaningful variation and also helping our diverse audience that comes start to transfer it back to the practice. And that was done through multiple cycles of problem solving throughout the evening. So using scenarios and personas. The emphasis on productive struggle and discovery, again, I think that comes back to really thinking about our what we would consider our secret sauce of the ETF, and that's our conveners and the environment that we create where people now, again, multiple people have come back for 10, 11 years to this event because of the environment and knowing that they can practice with the technologies, they can apply these new concepts or wrestle with them and start to think about bringing them back to their own practice in these small groups. And then again, reporting back out to the large group so we can hear and learn from one another. And then finally, we had a little bit of a fun twist on the metacognitive approaches. And what we do as part of this event is we send out a swag bag or a swag box. And within that, this particular year, we had a giant dice going back to, I should say a blue cube, going back to Bill's earlier example of with the batteries, the curiosity, growth mindset. And we invited everybody at home to roll that blue cube, and wherever it landed, we gave a reflective prompt. We did that multiple times throughout the event, and then had everybody as part of a closing activity. What is their commitment to action? So building those deliberate pauses throughout to reflect on what have I done and what am I going to be doing as part of my learning experience.
Sounds like everyone should have one of those blue cubes. And just for our listeners, you can't see what I can see, but Bill and Martin just held up their little blue cubes, and I think they're rolling them each day, getting some opportunities for reflection and metacognition. All right, well, I feel like we're running the risk at the moment of feeling like this adaptive expertise is just rainbows and unicorns, and we've got these fabulous experiences. But I think in the article, you also give some, you know, really frank assessments of the challenges to how we go about doing this. And you describe them in the paper as cross-cutting themes and recognizing that this is time and resource intensive. The education must be sensitive to learner needs and changing environments. Success is dependent on a clear understanding of the value proposition to learners and lots of extrinsic motivators like the busyness of the emergency department or the need to pass exams or the need to, you know, get a return on your investment of going to a CPD event. might get in the way of some of this. So I could ask each of you maybe to pick one of these themes or barriers and sort of speak to both what it feels like as well as what you've done about it. And maybe, Martin, I can come back to you to sort of start. Do you want to pick one of those cross-cutting themes?
The one I would take is the time and resource intensive, because this is hard. You know, kind of it's a desirable difficulty, but it's like getting your learners to eat broccoli when there's a donut nearby, right? And so that the donut in UME is the exam, and so that I can go get that superficial sugar rush and do that. Whereas Dr. Cotrera is telling me that no, I should be deepening my mechanistic understanding, and which ain't going to help me on Thursday's exam. And similarly, in the emergency department, we alluded to it, you know, kind of the notion of a productive struggle and the like, when you could be seen as efficient. We sometimes celebrate slickness or speed in a way that that disadvantages those who would take a deep mechanistic approach to something, or celebrate the meaningful variation as you go along. And so, you know, I think that it's getting people to understand that efficiency, yes, good, we need that, but the balancing off of it and when to step away from efficiency, and that the people who are learning it in a more methodical, slower fashion may be doing the right thing in terms of laying down their eventual tracks as they go across. And then same thing I would point out in Alyssa's domain in CPD, we've got some really, really superficial approaches to continuing medical education in which, you know, kind of sit back, enjoy the cruise, and, you know, kind of don't get challenged too much. Whereas if you start to do some of the active learning approaches that Alyssa alluded to, and you start challenging the way you learn now in order to have you have better approaches to messy situations where there is no right answer that I can put on slide 7. That's a harder sell, you know, kind of, and yet you want people to show up to your event. You want to have as many people as possible at the Education Technology Forum. So that you can imagine the discussions that Alyssa and our co-author Heather would have had around deciding, you know, kind of exactly the design of that session to celebrate these goals of somebody doing deliberately choosing a difficult approach compared to defaulting to the standard way that we're all comfortable with and that we're all happy about, like eating donuts.
Yes, or even, I guess, in Alyssa's case, it would be much easier to get some spectacular guest speaker and go to Vegas or Whistler and say, there you go, there's your CPD points. Well, that sounds like a little bit of a pass the ball to you, Alyssa. Did you want to build on the challenge that Martin identified, or did you want to pick out any other of those cross-cutting themes to comment on?
I think I can probably blend a couple. I'm thinking about that, the need for adaptability, and I think it was also evident throughout all of our examples, again, is creating that space and that environment to help us work through some of these messy problems together, or also think about in the deliberate approach that it takes to organize some of this, and in environments that generally are risk adverse, thinking about how do we foster innovation and creative problem solving, and how are we creating the spaces for that and the connection for that.
Yeah, and I think particularly when there's a sort of cultural shift towards consistency, which might then be interpreted as overly routinized approaches, and then some pushback against people that says, I don't want to follow the guideline. And, well, maybe sometimes there's some good reasons for that, and sometimes there's some not so good reasons for that. So it's a tricky balance as we think about all the other work that's being done in things like patient safety. All right, Bill, did you want to pick out a cross-cutting theme and comment on it?
No, I think to build just a little bit on the resource intensive, if you think about medical school education, it's far more cost and time efficient for me to put an expert up in front of a group of students, allow them to lecture for an hour, and then everybody moves on. And that's just not a great way to really wrestle with ideas and to learn and to have the variation and the struggle. And so it is more intensive from a resource standpoint, both of people and funds, to do small group learning, to allow them to wrestle with each other from a time standpoint, and the literature would support that it's just a better way to learn. And so to really be able to, as a school, invest in the way we think is the right way for our learners to do that. So that does require adaptability at this program level. I think one of the pieces to go with that that's also a challenge is that we've alluded to it several different times, asking both our learners and our faculty, teachers, residents, fellows in the middle to also be adaptable, both in their practice, but also in the way that they teach, right? If an excellent faculty member who's won teaching awards is used to giving his or her little 10-minute lecture, that's different than engaging a student back and forth with some questions that might get at what they really know and the variation. And so asking our faculty teachers, our resident teachers, to adapt both how they practice, but also how they teach. And then for the learners, asking them to adapt. They have proven by getting into medical school, they can learn for a test, but that oftentimes is very different than learning for conceptual understanding and the ability to use that in the future. And so we're asking adaptability at a lot of different levels, which just adds to the complexity of all that we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that your point three about success being dependent on sort of the learner's engagement with this, teachers as well, I think you're making the point there. They have to be on board with it, because it's one thing to learners to be thinking about becoming master adaptive learners, but if the teachers aren't providing those environments, then this is just not going to happen. Well, it's been such an interesting conversation. I want to, as we start to wrap up here, thank you for your time today. And just to sort of recap for everybody here, we spent a bit of time talking about what we mean by adaptive expertise. And again, I'd refer you to the table in the paper here to get a few solid definitions. But just to remind us, thinking about this combination of both the efficient problem solving for clinical encounters with known solutions, but also being able to draw on deep conceptual knowledge to apply innovative solutions when we're faced with novel challenges. We've talked about how we learn at these instructional strategies that are described in the paper, the developing the deep conceptual understanding, exposure to meaningful variation, productive struggle and discovery, and thinking about how we think, the metacognitive strategizing. So Bill, Alyssa, Martin, I want to thank you all so much for your time. Look forward to lots of adaptive expertise and learning it, and look forward to the work that you continue to do with the Harvard Macy program and running sessions and thinking about these concepts, I think particularly in the Educators program, but I suspect it's quite relevant to many of the others as well. So thank you all for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. So grateful.
Thank you.
All right. Well, this is Victoria Brazel signing off for the Harvard Macy Institute podcast. Mm-hmm.